We're happy to have Andreas Marmendi from Colby College talking about K-3 services from Cyber Wittenberg.
All right. Thank you, Dave. It's very nice to be back in Santa Barbara. Almost makes me never want to go back to Maine. The title of my talk today is K3 Surfaces from Cyber-Witten Curves, and it's based on joint work which is in progress with Chuck Duran. And at the stage where we are at right now, what we did, that's sort of the brief summary, is we constructed multi-parameter families of K3 surfaces from all extremal rational elliptic surfaces and computed their period maps. So that's really what we did. And what I want to do in my talk today is maybe first to revisit a famous example which has played an important role in math and physics and do exactly this construction. And then I want to put it a little bit in the context of physics and then show you some details of the computations I did with Chuck. But I think the first introductory example is very important to understand our strategy and also what we are after. And it's a very famous example of what is called the Kummer pencil, of constructing an elliptic vibration on a Kummer surface. So here's how the construction goes. You start with two elliptic curves. Let me call them E1 and E2. And I write both of those elliptic curves in their Legendre form. So, like this, where the lambda I describes the complex structure of my elliptic curve. So to have a non-singular curve, I want this to be either 0 or 1. Or if you prefer to think of the elliptic curves in terms of its modular parameter, you can say that lambda I is simply a function lambda of tau I. And what is this function lambda? It's a Hauptmodule, a modular invariant function of a certain level, and in fact it's the Hauptmodule of gamma 2. Alright, so just because we'll need it later, I'll also write down the J invariant of each elliptic curve in terms of its lambda parameter. Have to read that off my paper, so it's simply...
Do you need them to be different or different the same?
What's that?
Are the two elliptic curves have to be the same or have to be different or they can't be the same?
So right now I think of them as different. So I have two parameters, lambda 1 and lambda 2, which are not related by any isogeny or anything. All right, so this is what the J invariant looks in terms of the lambda parameter. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the abelian surface I get by taking the product of the two elliptic curves and this guy here, because both of those are elliptic curves, has an inversion automorphism, let's call it I, which is simply the inversion of sheets on each elliptic curve. So I'm switching sheets in each elliptic curve. And now, how do you construct a Kummer surface? Well, you divide the product by those of those two elliptic curves by the inversion automorphism. Now you see I get fixed points, I get 16 fixed points of this inversion automorphism exactly where the y's are equal to 0, where either of the y's are equal to 0. So I get 16 fixed points which cause this to be singular, and then if I take the minimal resolution of this space where I replace the singular points by a chain of exceptional divisors, I get a K3 surface which is called the Kummer surface of E1 cross E2. Alright, but what I want to do now is actually construct an elliptic vibration on that Kummer surface. So if I wanted to describe the function field of that Kummer surface, let's call it X, that's going to be a subfield of the two function fields of the elliptic curves, so X generated by X1, Y1, X2, Y2, which is invariant under the involution, and where the generators additionally satisfy one equation coming from the elliptic curve equation for the two elliptic curves. So what I'm going to do now is show you that the projection from A to either of the elliptic curves, I'll just take the first one, induces an elliptic vibration on X. And this is how it goes. So as my variables invariant under the involution, I'll pick X1. Now let me not mess this up. Capital X, which is y1 squared x2, and capital Y, which is 2y1 squared y1 times y2. Now you see all of those are invariant under the involution, but they satisfy one condition which comes from the elliptic curve equation for the two elliptic curves. And what you see, all I've really done is we scaled x2 by y1 squared, so the condition they satisfy is y squared equals 4x times x minus y1 squared times x minus y1 square lambda 2. Right? I just took the first elliptic curve and essentially rescaled all the coordinates by y1 square. Now, those guys here are functions of x1. Right? The function is written down right there. So what I've really done here is I've constructed an elliptic vibration on my Kummer surface where the base parameter is an x1 which lives in a CP1, and on top of each point in the CP1 the fiber is an elliptic curve. But I actually prefer to rewrite this equation in its Weierstrass normal form. Weierstrass normal form just means you shift the coordinates a little bit until the polynomial, the cubic polynomial on the right side has no quadratic term, and then you call the functions which appear on the right hand side G2 and G3, and you can easily compute what they are. Let me just give you the answer. 4/3 lambda 2 squared minus lambda 2 plus 1, so just a constant, times y1 squared. Remember, I consider y1 squared a function of x1, and g3 is 427 lambda 2 plus 1 lambda 2 minus 1 2 lambda 2 minus 1 times y1 cube. And you can also compute the discriminant of those two, so g2 cube minus 27 g3 square, and you get 16 lambda 2 squared times lambda 2 minus 1 squared times y1 to the 6. Now the discriminant...
Maybe worth pointing out for some people that the F theory convention is to not have the 4, and so people who know that another formula
can discriminate. Yes, there are several conventions. For the one, because we want to make contact with modular forms, it's often useful to have the 4.
Not objecting to the convention, I just want to make sure people know.
Yeah. Right, so that's the discriminant. It tells you at what point this elliptic vibration degenerates and develops singular fibers, and you see exactly where this happens here. This is just a number which is not zero, so we get zeros of order 6 exactly where the y1 to the 6 or the y1 cubed square vanishes. And where is that the case? Exactly where x1 is equal to 0, 1, lambda 1, and infinity, if you write it in a projective way. So we get singular fibers at x1 equals 0, 1, lambda 1, and infinity. And you actually see that around each singular point, g2 is going to vanish quadratically, g3 is going to vanish cubically, and delta is going to vanish in order 6. And in Kodaira's classification of singular fiber, this kind of singular fiber got this special name. It's a singular fiber of type I0 star. So that means we have 4 points here where the fibers become singular, become of type I0 star. And resolving those singular fibers will require you to insert exceptional curves. And if you do that, the fiber over those points have a structure described by the extended Dinking diagram of D4. So if you have seen Kodaira's classification of complex manifolds, you know what I'm talking about. Alright, so let me just check that I covered everything. Well, one important point of this elliptic vibration I haven't shown you yet. We could also ask, away from the singular points, how does the complex structure of the fiber varies? So in other words, what do we get when we compute the J invariant of each elliptic fiber? So let me do this little computation here. The J invariant of each elliptic fiber computed by G2 to the 3 divided by delta. Something very interesting happens here. You see, if I take G2 cube, I get a factor Y1 to the 6, which cancels exactly the factor Y1 to the 6 there. And all I end up with is, again, the J invariant of tau 2, which I computed before. So in other words, away from these singular fibers, the J invariant is constant in this elliptic vibration, and such an elliptic vibration is called isotrivial. All right, now what I want to do is compute the periods of this K3 surface, and I'll do it in two steps. First, I'm going to compute the period integral of each elliptic fiber. So in each fiber, I have a holomorphic one form, dx over y, and I can integrate this one over two independent cycles, which are usually called A cycle and B cycle. So if you think of the elliptic curve as a double cover of the elliptic fiber as a double cover of the complex plane, so that's the fiber, with two branch cuts, so I have four roots, E1, E2, E3, and let's say we put the last one at infinity, then I get a two-sheeted cover of the complex plane, and in each fiber, and to write down two independent cycles, which are usually called A cycle and B cycle, I can take the following. A cycle is the one I get from going around the two zeros E1 and E2, and the B cycle I get from going from the first branch cut to the second branch cut. As I cut through the branch cut, I'm continuing on the second sheet, and then I return on the second sheet. Alright, so those are two independent cycles in the homology of the fiber, and now I want to integrate in each fiber. But you see, if I plug this in, let's say over here, what I could do is I could use a simple substitution in this integral. So I have to integrate here dx over square root of, maybe there's a 2 in front, x times x minus y1 square times x minus y1 square lambda 2. And then what, you know, your calculus teacher would tell you is, you know, use a rescaling. So rescale x by x times y1 square. If you do that, this integral, you get a factor of 1 over y1 in front. And then the other integral, remember when I do this rescaling, I essentially just do the reverse of the scaling I did in the beginning. I essentially get an integral dx1 over x1 times x1 minus 1 times x1 minus, sorry, x2. x2 minus lambda 2. Alright, now what I have here are simply the A and the B period of the elliptic curve, of one of the elliptic curves I started with. And you can evaluate those. So, depending on whether you integrate over the A cycle or the B cycle, you will get two different periods, and in terms of the modular parameter, the ratio of those two periods will get you back your modular parameter tau 2. Alright, so I integrated once over the fiber. Now what I want to do is integrate again over the base of this vibration. So I'm taking the answer I got from up there, and I'm integrating this dx1 of the expression I got there. And again, I'll integrate it over the A and the B cycle in the base. Now, again, this is just a simple integration. Remember, from the point of view of the variables x1 and x2, those periods are just constants. So what I get are four possible answers. I get omega 1, omega 2, omega 1, omega 2 prime, omega 1 prime, omega 2, and omega prime, omega 2 prime. So those are the four linearly independent periods I can get if I integrate those two linearly independent periods of the fibers over the base. And you can also reformulate this in terms of special functions. Omega 2 expressed as a special function is just a hypergeometric function. If you have ever seen hypergeometric function, there's an integral representation of it which looks just like that. So this is nothing other than the 2f1, 1/2, 1/2, 1 of lambda 1. And similarly for omega 2, sorry, this was lambda 2 and the other one was lambda 1. And so you see what those periods here are, they are really the solution of a linear system of rank 4, where the linear system just consists of two copies of the hypergeometric differential operator. So solutions to rank 4 linear system, but it's a rather trivial rank 4 linear system because it's just a product of two hypergeometric functions. Alright, now from the point of view of the K3 surface, you can actually reinterpret this computation, and this is what I wanted to show you next. So, from the point of view of the K3, instead of doing this integration as first integrating the holomorphic differential over the fiber and then integrating what you get over the base, you can think of this as a double integral of the holomorphic 2 form on your K3 surface. So, and you actually see that the way I constructed the cycles of integration, I'm actually integrating over a closed real 2 surface in my K3 surface. Remember, the A and B cycles are closed cycles in the fiber. And now I obtain my two-dimensional surface by taking the cycle in the fiber and following a closed path in the base. However, as you go around those singularities of I0 star, the monodromy acts by minus identity on the periods. You can see that, for example, from this expression. So what that means is that an A cycle gets transformed into an A cycle, and a B cycle gets transformed into a B cycle, and this surface S is actually a closed surface. So now what this object describes are really the periods of the K3 surface. And since we can always rescale the holomorphic differential by a complex number, you should really think of this map as starting with the K3 surface based on the two elliptic curves given by lambda 1 and lambda 2 and giving you a point in complex projective 3 space. Where the entries here are, let me call this data, periods of the holomorphic 2 forms. Now, if you look at the Neon-Severi lattice of the K3 surface we constructed, so by the Lefschetz 1-1 theorem, the intersection of H11 of x with H2xz, this guy here has rank, which is also called the Picard rank, 18. You see that from the construction we did, we had 4 singular fibers of type I0 star, which contribute with a rank of 4 in the Neon-Severi lattice. And then we have an additional contribution of 2 to the Neon-Severi lattice, which comes from the class of the smooth fiber and the section of our elliptic fibration. Anyways, if you were to take any of the cycles in the neon Severi lattice and integrate it, and integrate the holomorphic 2 form over it, you will get 0, right? Because the degrees 1, 1 and 2, 0 don't match. So you get 0. But the transcendental lattice, which is the orthogonal complement, the neon Severi lattice, in the rank 2 homology, has rank 4, and what we have written down is really 4 linearly independent cycles, and then we have integrated the holomorphic 2 form over those 4 linearly independent cycles, and we have gotten this point in P3, which describes all linearly independent periods of the holomorphic 2 form of our K3 surface. Now, the last comment I want to make is that you see that linearly all these periods are independent, but quadratically there is a relation between the periods. Remember that the ratio of omega 2 prime over omega 2 is exactly the modular parameter of the second elliptic curve, omega 1 prime over omega is the modular parameter of the first elliptic curve. So if I call this, let's say, x, y, z, w, you see there's a quadratic relation. What is the quadratic relation? X times w equals y times z. So you can actually think of this as defining a quadratic form in R4. And so let me call this quadratic form of a vector x. And then if I go from the quadratic form to its associated bilinear form, by doing the usual thing, you know what I mean? Then you see that there's another relation you get, which comes from the fact that both the imaginary part of tau 1 and tau 2 are positive, which is simply the relation q of x, comma x bar is bigger than 0 if I plug in as the components of the vectors exactly those functions. So what you actually see is that the period map associates to our K3 surface a quadratic in P3, and this is actually a special case of a big theorem which describes what the period domain of K3 surfaces is in general. So I think this is what I wanted to explain on the blackboard. So just to summarize here, in this very simple example of a K3 surface, which was constructed as a Kumar surface of the Z2 orbifold of the T4 torus, you can, in a very simple way, construct the K3 periods. They are just the product of the two periods of the two elliptic curves. And by understanding what those periods on the elliptic curves are, you can actually give a modular interpretation of the K3 periods in terms of products of modular forms stemming from the elliptic curve you started with. And what I did with Chuck was really following this procedure, but in the context of more complicated elliptic vibrations on K3. All right, so now I'm going to switch to the transparencies, and hopefully explain a little bit more about the details of what we did. So in this example I just constructed, again, I've listed here the very properties of the example we worked out, have a very interesting interpretation in F theory. So Zen in 95 was the first to observe that this construction based on the Z2 orbifold of T4 has a direct correspondence in F theory. I've listed here what the criteria we worked out in the math language corresponds to in the physics language. And by working with this particular elliptic vibration on K3, he was actually able to use a lot of other machinery they have in physics to investigate this kind of theory. And through this, he was able to make contact with a different physical theory, which is called the N equals 2 super Young-Mills theory for SU2 with 4 quark flavors. So I won't try to explain what that physical theory is, but I just want to alert you to some important features of that theory. So I just stated that this physical theory, which is called F theory, exactly is based on elliptic vibrations on K3 surfaces, and that the modular parameter of the elliptic vibration as well as the geometry of the base is given a particular physical interpretation in F theory. Now, in this SU2 gauge theory, you are in a similar situation. Very important quantities of that physical theory are captured by an elliptic vibration. However, in this elliptic vibration, the total space is not a K3 surface, but the rational elliptic surface, so topologically CP2 blown up in 9 points. And similar to what we had on the F theory side, the modular parameter of each elliptic fiber is given a particular meaning. And similar, the base is given a particular physical meaning too. What Zen was able to do was to show that if you go to the limit, the orbifold limit, on the F theory side, that the physics associated to one of the singular fiber of type I0 star on the F theory side corresponds to the physics in this gauge theory in a special limit. So the rational elliptic surface you are considering on the gauge theory side in this very special limit is also an isotrivial vibration. Remember, isotrivial vibration just meant that the J invariant of the elliptic fibers didn't vary. But the total space is different. The total space is not a K3, it's a rational elliptic surface. So instead of having a configuration where you have 4 I0 star fibers, you just have 2 I0 star fibers. And you see, if you add up 2 times 4 from the 2D4 parts of the neon Severi lattice plus the additional contribution of 2 from the section and the fiber, you get up to rank 10, which is exactly the rank of a rational elliptic surface. But from the observation that the physics around an I0 star fiber in the gauge theory can be identified with the physics around the I0 star fiber in the F theory, Zen made the following proposal. Why don't you identify the two theories in the following way? Around each I0 star fiber, assuming that the J invariant of the isotrivial vibration of the gauge theory is equal to the J invariant of the F theory. And what's the easiest way to make this work? Well, here on the gauge theory side, we want something which, from its total space, is a rational elliptic surface. On the F theory side, we want something which, where the total space is a K3 surface. So what we could do is start out with the G2 and G3, which define the Weierstrass equation on the gauge theory side, and just multiply with a polynomial of degree 4 and 6, which factors in this special way so that it doesn't affect the J invariant. In other words, if I compute the J invariant for those and the J invariant for those, I get exactly the same.
Question. So I'm kind of missing the elliptic K3 to rational elliptic surface map, and part of the reason I'm confused is that inside of the Witten theory, you have an elliptic vibration over the Coulomb branch,
yes,
which is the upper half plane, and in particular, this thing is non-compact.
So in Seiberg-Witten theory, yeah, so the U plane is really a copy of CP1, where you take out certain points, the points where magnetic monopoles and dions become.
So you take out the point at infinity.
So I take out
and
the point.
You take out the points of the.
Exactly. So this would be an elliptic vibration which is not isotrivial. So
yes,
what you just described is a slightly different theory, which will be very important later on. Here, we have an isotrivial elliptic vibration. So that is the N. NF equals 4 theory, where all the masses are turned off. And there you just have two singular fibers at zero, at infinity, and the J invariant is trivial.
But why is the base compact?
Well, I mean, if you include the points where you have singular fibers, it's just CP1.
So if I include the point at infinity.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just don't see what that is in the physical theory, because in principle you can let the web of the adjoint scalar sort of go all the way out.
So you are saying, why am I considering it?
Really, the point at infinity is the only thing that's confusing me. Why you have something compact in my mind. I mean, it's not a big point, but.
Okay. I mean, so if you go back to the original paper of Seiberg and Witten in the case N equals 2, NF equals 0,
yes,
they are describing an elliptic vibration over the U plane.
Yes.
And so you have two singular fibers here of type I1.
Yes.
Where the magnetic monopoles and the dions become massless,
yes,
but you also know what the monodromy at infinity in the weak coupling limit should,
yes,
be.
Absolutely.
And the monodromy is exactly that one corresponding to an I4 star singularity. You could write down what the monodromy is, probably up to conjugation. You get this.
Plus four? Plus four, not minus four. -1, 4, 0, -1. It doesn't matter.
So am I doing something wrong?
I'm just telling you that the correct answer is
-1, 4, 0.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And then you're going to say that this is the monodromy that's associated with rational.
You can count here. So that corresponds to a D8. So a rank 8 part. And then you get two contributions for the fiber and the section.
Where you would add twice as much if it were K3 instead.
Exactly. All right. So, but the observation doesn't only work in this special limit. Then also then considered what happens when you deform the theory away from the orbifold limit. And he still found that, so what happens on the K3 side is that one of the I0 star singularities breaks up into, most generically, 6 I1 singularities. And on the gauge theory side, the same thing happens. And so the correspondence between F-theory and gauge theory continues to work. So in terms of math terminology, what you are doing here is you are starting really with the rational elliptic surface, and then you are really adding 2 I0 star fibers, and that brings you up to a K3 surface. And so that was exactly the approach Chuck and I followed. We said, all right, instead of starting with this very special isotrivial rational elliptic surface, start with any extremal rational elliptic surface. Extremal just means that the Picard rank is 10 and that you don't have any non-trivial sections. and do the same procedure. At two I0 star singularities, that gives you a two-parameter family of K3 surfaces, just as we got here. And by a little trick, which I hopefully explain later, you actually not only get one family of, not one two-parameter family of K3 surfaces, you also get another one, which I denote by X1 and X2. Now, if I try to compute the K3 periods for X1, it's very simple. It's not quite as simple as in the example I showed you, but it's pretty much the same. Remember, the trick here for evaluating the K3 periods was really breaking this integral up into an integral over the fiber and an integral over the base. And the same trick you can do here. And so, in general, what you will get is from the fiber-wise period of the rational elliptic surface by what is called an Euler transform, exactly carrying out this integral over the base, you will get the K3 periods. And it's very straightforward to compute those periods in terms of special functions. And then the geometrically more interesting family of K3 surfaces, X2, is related to X1 in a way which doesn't change the K3 periods. So we also know what the K3 periods for X2 are. So when you do that, you get all those examples of two-parameter families of K3 surfaces, and you can exactly write down what the linear system is the periods satisfy and what the solutions are. And now you can actually restrict to some one-parameter subfamily of Picard rank 19 K3 surfaces and see whether those are interesting examples people studied before. And you will see that a lot of the computations people did in the context of mirror maps, where they put in really hard work to actually compute this period, almost come out for free in this approach. And so most of the examples we rediscovered were known in the literature, but there were one example that was missed that is related to the modular elliptic surface of gamma 1 of 5, where the series expansion of the regular solution has some nice connection to Apéry's proof of the irrationality for zeta 2. It's exactly the same recurrence relation. Then, once we did that, we also determined the quadratic period relation. Remember, I showed you in the very basic example that there's a quadratic relation between the periods. We can do the same thing here. But then we actually come down a little bit to the physics interpretation of our result. So let me go back to the original isotrivial rational elliptic surface that Seiberg and Witten considered. In here, there's only one way to turn on one mass which reduces the rank by one. So what I'm saying here is I have two D4 singularities, and I want to split up one of the D4 singularities in a way that the rank goes only down by one. Up to two isogeny, there's only one way of doing this. Now, you can ask, if I do this here and then construct the K3 surface, which is related by this duality to it, what kind of K3 surface do I get? Well, you get a three-parameter K3 surface of generically Picard rank 17. And through the construction of X1 and X2, you can actually show that the moduli, those three parameters, are really the moduli of a genus 2 curve with level 2 structure. That comes from the fact that one of the two surfaces is a Kummer surface, and it's exactly the Kummer surface of the Jacobian of a genus 2 curve with level 2 structure. What is interesting about this is that this space, the moduli of genus 2 curves of level 2 structure, has been investigated in the context of heterodic string compactifications on K3 cross T2 with one Wilson line. So I think there's some work by Meyer and Stieberger and Kukurelis in the 90s where they showed that certain n equals 2 heterotic string compactification exactly have this moduli space. And from our construction, this moduli space is singled out if you turn on one mass parameter in this super Young-Mills theory. If you turn on one mass parameter, you deform the isotrivial rational elliptic surface, and the corresponding K3 surface is exactly the K3 surface which comes from the Kummer surface of a Jacobian of this genus 2 curve.
So after you turn on, so you have four flavors, and you're turning on one mass parameter. Uh-huh. So then in the IR, you only have three flavors left after you integrated it out. So what is the singularity structure that D4 goes to? Because there's no...
It's exactly this one without the star.
Which is an A3 singularity.
Yeah.
Good.
So that's exactly the Seebeck-Witten curve for NF equals 0. When you break up the I4 star into an I4 and an I0 star.
Into an I4 and an I... Sorry. When you break... Say this one more time.
So you break up the I4 into an I0 star, into an I4, and this additional I0 star you get is exactly the additional I0 star we wanted to have over there.
I'm confused, though, because if you only turn on one mass parameter, how do you get to an NF equals 0 theory? I would think you go to an NF equals 3 theory.
Well, I think if you read... if you go back to Seebeck and Witten's original paper, they describe exactly the renormalization group flow which gets you from the higher NF equals 4, 3, 2 curves to the lower ones. Mm-hmm. But... remember, when I break this up, this is not the NF equals 0 case anymore.
Right.
So if you take that into account, that is your extra parameter.
An I4 and an I0 star.
All right. So this is the outline of what we did, and this turned out to take much longer than I thought it would. How long?
You know the seminar. It goes for a while.
Yeah, all right, but when I was still here, I always hated the people who took, too much time. So let me keep it short. So I'll show you some details of the computation now, and then at some point I'll decide that it's time to stop. So we are starting now with an arbitrary rational elliptic surface, but we want to restrict to the extremal ones. I explained that before. And they are very interesting examples. Among those, we already mentioned the Seebeck-Witten curve for n equals 2, nf equals 0, and nf equals 2. And there are many others. They were classified, the structure of singular fibers was classified by Miranda and Pearson in the 80s. And so those are all possible combinations of singular fibers which give you extremal rational elliptic surfaces. So in here you see the isotrivial fibration we started with. For the procedure, I also put an I0 singularity at 0, but I0 is not really a singular fiber, it's a regular fiber. So it's just to make this picture look a little better. And so here you see the extremal rational elliptic surface with three singular fibers and with four singular fibers. All of them have a very nice modular interpretation. So similar to how this base parameter here, as I explained in the beginning, you can think of as an Hauptmodule of a certain principle or other congruent subgroups. Same thing happens for the other examples. They have some nice modular interpretation. Now what you can do is, you can do exactly as we did before, try to integrate the holomorphic one form along the elliptic fibers, along the A cycle and B cycle along the elliptic fiber. I'm not doing the isotrivial cases, because the other isotrivial cases can be done in a very similar manner than I showed you. It's just a little exercise. So I'm just focusing on the two interesting cases. And in those cases, when you carry out the integration along the fiber, the differential equation you get for the ones with three singular fibers is a hypergeometric function. And if I write the solution is a hypergeometric function, I'm just listing the solution regular at t equals 0. Of course, there's also the singular solution. And for four singular fibers, it's described by the so-called Horn equation that describes a second order linear differential equation with four regular singularities. But if you know something about the Horn equation, we are not picking arbitrary parameter. It's actually quite restrictive. Only the position of the fourth singularity and this auxiliary parameter vanishes in all of those examples. What's nice about this is that for all of those examples, we not only have an answer of what the fiber-wise integration is in terms of hypergeometric function, we also have a modular interpretation. We know that those guys here must describe some weight 1 modular forms, and those tau parameters are some Hauptmodules of certain levels, so we can take the best out of the two worlds. We have a description in terms of differential equation and a description in terms of modular forms. Alright, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the twist. But instead of doing right away the twist with two free parameters, I just do a twist with one parameter. So in this picture, I'm adding two I0 star singular fibers, but I'm letting one of them collide with a singularity at zero. That's just to make what I'm telling you easier. In the end, I'll also show you the two parameter family. So here's what we do. We do exactly the procedure that we learned from the F theory, gauge theory correspondence. We start with our rational elliptic surface, and we just put, we have a quadratic polynomial which controls the position of our two I0 star fibers, and we put a factor of h squared and h cubed in front of g2 and g3. And in this way, if you let the two positions of the I0 star very freely, you get two free parameters, but we restricted one of the I0 stars to collide with what we had at zero. So an example here, if I take the Seiberg-Witten curve, which has I2, I2, I2 star, that's an extremal rational elliptic surface. You are adding a star and adding an I0 star singularity, and you see this is a K3 surface of Picard rank 19. All right.
How do you choose which fiber to enhance with a star?
So in the end, we actually went through all combinations, and as soon as you go to the two parameter family, it doesn't matter. You just look at different specializations of the two parameter system. Alright, now what is the key is that when you do the twist procedure, the idea of how we solve this inner integral in this very basic example I showed you in the beginning still goes through. You can do a substitution which pulls out a factor connected to the square root, and then you can carry out the inner integration. That's the same we do here. Instead of integrating the holomorphic 2 form over a 2 cycle, we first integrate along the fiber. We know each fiber is a quadratic twist, so we know the period is just a quadratic twist of the period we got from our rational elliptic surface, and then we integrate this again. Now, if you take a hypergeometric function divided by a square root of a quadratic polynomial and integrate it, this is called an Euler transform. I think Euler looked at it because if you start with a 2f1 here and do this transformation, it gets you up to a 3f2 and so on. This story continues. It turns a 3f2 into a 4f3 and so on. So we can do that and actually evaluate the K3 periods for all those one parameter family of K3 surfaces. You see, for the one with three singular fibers, I get a 3F2. For the Hoyne equation, I get a third order differential equation, and I didn't find a name for it in the literature. But what is actually true for both of the periods is that the differential operator decomposes into a symmetric square. So similar to what we have had in the picture here, that you get a rank 4 system by just multiplying regular and irregular solution, singular solution of a rank 2 system, the same is actually true here. Now, if you see a decomposition like this, I thought, all right, maybe there's a connection to what is called the families of MN polarized K3 surfaces, which have been studied a lot in the context of constructing mirror maps. And indeed, there is. Because there's a second construction, how you can get a family of K3 surfaces, which is not just a twist. Oh, sorry, I was getting ahead of myself. First, let me show you some of the results we got. So if you actually evaluate some of those periods and their regular solutions, you can, just as before, write down what the quadratic relation between the periods are. And you can also write down series expansion of the regular solutions. And all of those series expansion have played an important role in the construction of mirror maps. From the periods with four singular fibers, four of them are quite boring because all you do is actually replacing the argument in your 3F2 by a square. But two of them, which come from the modular elliptic surface for gamma naught of 6 and gamma 1 of 5, are actually interesting. They don't reduce to hypergeometric differential equations, and you have to describe them in terms of Hoyne equations. And the recurrence relations you get for the regular solutions are quite interesting. So for gamma naught of 6, this has been pointed out by Boykers and collaborators, who shown that the series expansion of the regular solution of the family of K3 surfaces exactly reproduces Apéry's recurrence relation of the series expansion he used in the proof of the irrationality of zeta 3. But the one example that I think was missed in the literature was the one for gamma 1 of 5. So out of our construction, we actually get a family of K3 surfaces whose K3 periods exactly have the recurrence relation that is the one that Apéry used in his proof of the irrationality of zeta 2. But what I want to emphasize is people worked very hard to get those series expansions and connect them to K3 periods. For us, they just come out all at the same time by this trick which we essentially copied from F theory. All right, now let me take maybe 10 more minutes. And is that okay, Dave?
Sure.
There's a second way how you can construct a family of K3 surfaces, which is not just by twisting, but by also introducing a double cover of the base. So remember, a rational, extremal rational elliptic surface contributes, the singular fibers contribute an amount of 8 to the neon Severi lattice. So I can get 16 in the following way. I can take this 8 and add 8 f- from the two I0 of star fibers and add two from the fiber and the zero section, or I can just double the eight I get from the rational elliptic surface and add two from the zero section and the fiber, and I also get a Picard rank 18 family. So here I've written it out in a formula. So you see, instead of just doing a twist, we are also doing a substitution in the base parameter. We are introducing a double cover of the base parameter. And that gets you up to a K3 surface as well. Let me show you an example. This here is an extreme irrational elliptic surface. It has singular fiber I1, I1, 2 star. And now if I introduce the double cover, what happens? Well, essentially I'm doubling the number of singular fibers except at the branching points where the I1 turns into an I2. So that gives you a family of K3 surfaces as well. And in the examples I outlined, this family, one parameter family of Picard rank 18 K3 surfaces is, they carry exactly the MN polarization we were hoping to see from the differential equation. So all of those X2 surfaces we constructed in that way actually have the neon Severi lattice is isometric to H plus E8 plus E8 plus a class of square minus 2n. All right. And that, again, makes contact with a lot of what people have done, where they computed periods of one parameter families of K3 surfaces, but in a way we get them all at once, all by Euler transform. See, the key point is, I forgot to mention that, if you write down the holomorphic 2 form for the second family and take the coordinate transformation and the twisting into account, this map is exactly equivariant with respect to the holomorphic 2 form. In other words, if I plug this in and take the twisting of x and y into account, I get exactly to the holomorphic 2 form I started with just by this simple quadratic twist of adding two I0 star fibers. So what we are doing here is really the following. We are constructing two families of K3 surfaces. This X1 was obtained by this trivial quadratic twist of adding two I0 star fibers. That procedure has the advantage that you can easily compute the K3 periods just by the method I outlined in my first example. And then we constructed the more interesting, geometrically more interesting family of K3's X2, which have the same periods as X1, but carry the more interesting geometry. Now, within the periods, you can also make contact to modular forms. So, I told you before that those K3 periods decompose as squares of solutions to rank 2 linear systems, and each of those solutions you can actually relate to modular forms. Don't want to go into the details. It uses for the 2F1 an identity which is called Kummer identity, and for the Hoyne equation, I don't think it carries a name, but there's also a special transformation which transforms one Hoyne equation back to another Hoyne equation for which we have a modular interpretation. So out of this, we not only get the differential equations which describe the periods, we also get the interpretation in terms of modular forms. Now, the good thing about this construction is that you can also make it more general now and have a full two-parameter family of K3 surfaces, and you can just follow the same procedure. Nothing changes except that instead of having an ordinary differential equation describing the K3 periods as its solution, you now have a system of PDEs, of linear PDEs, whose solution are the periods. But everything else goes through as well. For the case with three singular fibers, this function is known in the literature. The system is known as uphill hypergeometric function. It's a generalization of the hypergeometric function in one variable. And its solution describes the periods of those two parameter K3 surfaces. And again, I've only written down the regular solution. Here's another example. So this is the system of linear partial differential equations the periods satisfy. So you see I'm taking derivative with respect to the two free parameters A and B, which control the position of the two I0 stars. That's the system you get for one of the two parameter families. For the one which come from four regular singularities, it's a little bit more messy, but we can write it down too. Now, if you go through the examples, you discover again at least one example which has been studied widely in physics and math literature before. You exactly get the two-parameter family of m-polarized K3 surfaces. That would be the X2, and the X1 would be the Kummer surface, which is related to the one by Shioda-Inoue correspondence. But now in a very simple way, we can actually write down the differential equations that are satisfied by their periods. And in fact, in many of those examples, the X1 we get is a Kummer and realizes one of the the inequivalent elliptic vibrations on the Kummer surface of two non-isogenous elliptic curves have been classified by Guizzo. And many of the examples we constructed realize some of those elliptic vibrations. We are not sure whether we actually realize all of them, but we are certain that we are realizing more than half of those. And there are some more nice features about the two parameter families, which again allow you to make contacts with modular forms. I'm skipping those details. The last thing I want to mention is that, let me go back to the list I started out with. If you take this list of extremal rational elliptic surfaces, you can ask, for which of those can I also construct K3 surfaces with three I0 star singular fibers? And you see, those here are ruled out by considerations of rank. It just doesn't work if you write down the polynomials. But in all of those examples here, you can in principle add three I0 star singular fibers, taking a star away from the fiber at infinity, and hoping to get a K3 surface of PKR rank 17. However, for those, when you take the star away and add a fiber of I0 star, the Picard rank drops by 2 and not by 1. So there's only one family. Those two modular elliptic surfaces are related by 2 isogeny, where you can actually construct three parameter K3 surface of Picard rank 17 by adding three I0 star singularities. And again, you can write down the system of partial differential equations the periods satisfy, and then you can relate, you can actually show that one of those K3 surfaces is actually a Kummer surface of an abelian surface, which is obtained as a Jacobian of a genus 2 curve with level 2 structure. And again, that makes nice contact with work that has been done in physics, because the moduli describing those curves of genus 2 curves have been shown to describe some moduli spaces of heterotic string compactifications. But, you know, our procedure was just copying from Zen procedures. Start with a rational elliptic surface, construct a K3 surface, but in a sort of natural way, we are guided to those K3 surfaces which are related to the Kummers of Jacobian of genus 2 curves, which again have a description in terms of heterotic string compactifications. Okay, let me stop here. Sorry that I went over time. Thank you very much. Okay.
I guess that's a very simple question.
Yeah.
So the sample Wheaton curve refers to the fiber? The name of Seinberg Wheaton curve.
Yes.
That's referred to the fiber of this vibration.
Yes, that's right. So they are really considering a family of elliptic curves where the base parameter labels the vacuum expectation value of a certain scalar field. And then for each of those, the elliptic fiber controls the gauge coupling. And so it's really, even though they call it a curve, it's really a family of curves which topologically turn out to be rational elliptic surfaces. They are more complicated, so this is for gauge group SU2. For higher gauge groups, Seibach-Witten curves would be families of genus 2 curves, which, of course, is also very interesting because all of a sudden we have families of genus 2 curves popping out there as well. So the question would be, is there a relation of this guy to the Seibach-Witten curve of, let's say, SU3 gauge theory?
When you said genus 2, level 2, what's the level refers to? Does it refer to a degree of a bundle or something?
So the degree meant... in what context did I say level?
At one point you said you need a curve of genus 2, level 2.
Right there.
I just wonder what's that level?
Oh, that just refers, so if I'm talking about a modular curve, it just refers to the level of the congruent subgroup I'm considering. So if I'm considering the modular curve for gamma 2, I would call that
level 2.
Level 2.
More questions? Let's thank Andreas again.
Thank you.